Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. At Finstrat, we provide CFO-led accounting, finance, and reporting services to assist clients monetize their business. Stick around to the end of the podcast, and I'll share how you can be our next guest. Now, on to the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. With us today, we have Jay Crone. Jay is the Managing Director and VC with Deloitte Ventures. Jay, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Christian.
So let's start with Deloitte. What's the fund's investment thesis?
Well, Deloitte is looking to support innovative Canadian companies to help develop the next generation of successful startups in Canada. So basically, Deloitte believes that we have all of the pillars to do venture capital well. So we think that we could be able to leverage our 1,500 partners and 15,000 employees across Canada to find deal flow, that we should have the subject matter expertise in-house to find the right deals, and that we should be able to be good partners for the companies that we invest in to help them grow, and that that should create a virtuous cycle where we can find deals, get into them, and build good a good reputation with the founders that we invest in so that they recommend us to other founders. And if you can do those three things well, then you should be able to be a good venture capitalist. So that's sort of our thesis, and we look to invest into Series A and Series B stage companies that are making software that would be of interest to Deloitte clients, so selling to the enterprise. And we've got six key focus areas, which are cybersecurity, climate tech, fintech, future of work, health tech, and AI.
Got it. And then, so we've had the benefit of having a handful of corporate VCs on the podcast, and you know, it seems structure is definitely a focus. You know, are you investing on balance sheet, off? You know, how is the investment committee structured? What insights can you give us as to how Deloitte thinks about investing?
Yeah, corporate venture capital is something that I'm super interested in. I've done it at two firms so far and love to spend time thinking about the best way to do it. It's always different for every firm. So for Deloitte Ventures, I'd say we are in the range of strategic to financial, where, you know, strategic being you care only about the potential for to do business with them or to learn about new technologies, and financial being more that you're focused on the financial returns themselves. We kind of think of ourselves as being financial focused, but investing into companies that have relevance to Deloitte. So those six focus areas that I mentioned before are areas where Deloitte has a lot of horsepower on our advisory practice side of things. So we have a lot of ability to help our companies on that front. But in terms of the structure, like we have a team of six people. We're Deloitte employees. We're investing from Deloitte's balance sheet. So we have no external LPs. It's all Deloitte's capital that we're investing. And in terms of the investment committee, it's made up essentially of C-suite level executives from Deloitte Canada that we present our deal flow to, and then ultimately sign off on the deals we do.
Fantastic. A bunch more questions, and I'd love to unpack the group's focus. But before we do, I always find it's beneficial if you can share with us your career progression and how it led up to Deloitte Ventures.
Yeah, happy to do that. I've had my career has gone through a couple of different phases. So government to working in capital markets to entrepreneurship, and then ultimately into tech and venture capital. But digging into that in a little bit more detail, from an education perspective, I did an undergraduate degree in economics. And through that program, did a couple of internships at the federal government in Canada. So focused primarily on research and policy related roles for a couple of different departments. Enjoyed my time there, but decided that my interests lied in capital markets. And so moved to Toronto to do a master's in financial economics program at the University of Toronto, which was really designed to help people shift from an economics undergraduate degree into working in capital markets. I was able to leverage that program to get a job in investment banking, first with a co-op and then working full-time at Scotia Capital. So Scotia Capital, kind of think of those as the first years of my career. Worked in both on the corporate finance and M&A side of things, focused on a range of industries. So in Canada, we call it diversified, which is a wide range of things, which includes consumer products, industrial products, tech being the main ones. I spent most of my time on industrial and consumer products. So that wasn't my introduction to tech at that point, but got to learn a lot about doing valuation work, how to think about raising capital, how to think about all different types of companies and how investors would think of them from a valuation perspective. So built up a lot of valuable kind of foundational financial skills at that point. As I kind of progressed through my career there, I really enjoyed my time in investment banking, but I did start to gravitate towards wanting to do something more entrepreneurial. And so left and started a company with a longtime friend of mine. We were really keen to build a product that could help people prepare for interviews. So something we were passionate about, having gone through many interviews ourselves coming out of undergrad and seeing the difference that having good preparation can make to a candidate. And sometimes it's the best prepared candidates that get the role and not necessarily the best candidates. So seeing that as an opportunity, we built an online course business. This was sort of like in the pre-Coursera era, so building lots of stuff using tools that today would be considered vastly outdated. But great experience, really fun to build something from scratch. Learned a ton. Probably my most critical takeaways were, one, subscription businesses are really interesting. So really developed a love for subscription businesses going through that. Getting a customer once and having them pay twice and three times and over again is awesome. And also that you should spend money on, hiring people to do the things that you don't need to do. So that was a lesson learned because we didn't do that well. But in any case, great learning there. From there, I moved on to working for someone else again, and got a role at a social media and analytics company called Hootsuite out of Vancouver, and worked in their corporate development business and corporate development group. So helped them look at M&A opportunities as well as reseller and referral partnerships with other vendors in the social media and analytics space. And that was kind of my first foray into like a true SaaS business. So got to learn kind of the basics of how those types of businesses work, what the key metrics are, all that sort of things, or all those sorts of things. And from there, moved into corporate venture capital. So came across a role at TELUS Ventures. Was really interested to see what it would be like to focus on. Not necessarily control stakes, but making minority investments into early stage companies and developing a thesis around what's going to drive good returns for a venture strategy working within the construct of a corporate venture capital group. And got to be part of TELUS Ventures during a really exciting time where they basically expanded by, like 30-fold in terms of the dollars out the door per year that they were investing. But grew the team from about four or five people at the time that I joined to about 13 or 14 people when I left, got a chance to invest all around the world. So we made investments in Canada, the US, the UK, Australia, the Nordics, led deals, were a follow-on investor in deals, all different stages. So that was a really great, like, foundational experience for the corporate venture capital space. And then in 2022, Deloitte Ventures launched their corporate venture group in Canada. I had the opportunity to join in a leadership role to help build the team, get that initiative off the ground and launched, and be one of the co-leads on the investment side of things. And I've been doing that for the last 3 years.
Fantastic. So you mentioned your time as an entrepreneur, and I heard you say the significance and value of delegation, but any other key takeaways as an operator that have had a material influence on how you look at investing today?
Yeah, I think like the other big takeaway was I would have is that if you need to have a vision for what type of business that you're building, and in particular, if you're seeking institutional money, then you need to be building a business that is aligned with raising institutional money. So I would say at the time that I was building Breaking Bay Street, which was the company that my friend and I built. Our goals were to spend as little money as possible and just grow this thing, leveraging our own horsepower, 100% of our own efforts and nobody else's, basically. So, the end result of that was building, a more of a lifestyle business than a scalable startup business. That was great for us. We still, I'm still very happy with what we accomplished with that company. But I think, my advice to people today is like, don't just think about what your passion is. Consider also what your end goal is, and fund the company and grow the company in a way that aligns with what your end goal is for the company you're building.
I agree 100%. I like to frame it as begin with the end in mind. It's a lot easier to get to destination when you've established where you're going. So coming back to Deloitte Ventures, what does the due diligence process look like today? Any overarching themes that drive the process?
Yeah, I mean, we start off with trying to keep ourselves in the loop of deals that are going on in the markets that we cover. So we have lots of relationships with venture firms across North America, accelerators. We also try to keep up relationships with many of the partners across Deloitte that are have exposure to the startup ecosystem, because they're kind of a superpower source of deal flow that we have as well. And then, in terms of due diligence, like we're typically starting off with an intro call. We see hundreds to, thousands of companies that we have a first call with every year. In those calls, we're trying to gauge, whether they're going to meet our criteria from our thesis perspective. So, are they software businesses? Are they selling to the enterprise or have some enterprise angle? Are they growing at a pace that's aligned with a venture scalable business? Some of the basic check marks that we see to see if it's a fit. And then, if they can kind of meet those first couple criteria, then usually we're going to spend more time with them, and we'll typically put together like a teaser document, we call it, within our group. So a couple pages that kind of outlines the basics of the company, as well as the deal that we are potentially going to be a part of, and get the team to discuss it and sign off on spending more time to do a bit of a deeper dive. And then at that point, assuming we get the team's buy-in, we're typically going to get access to a data room, spend some more time looking at financial model, materials about the product, doing a product demo, spending more time with the founders, getting to know them, their background, their ambitions for the company. And that diligence is going to lead us to our sort of next stage, which is putting together a deck for our investment committee, and this kind of two phases. One is like, the putting together the materials ourselves is partially going to answer the question of if we want to go to the investment committee or not. And as we dig into some of the key questions that may come up, so think like, what are the unit economics of this company going to look like? What sort of valuation do we think this round's going to happen at, and how do we compare that to other deals that are happening in the space, or other deals that we've done. What are the return expectations? All that type of analysis that we do, and then we'll go to our investment committee and get approval to get it done. But that's sort of the basics of it.
And I'm curious, do you insist on meeting the founders face to face before you invest?
We try to do it. We have definitely done deals where we have not met them in person. Part of the venture business is that sometimes deals come together quickly, and if they're in another city, you may have to manage. So we don't have a hard rule. I'd say it's a soft rule and a sort of a best efforts basis to make it happen. And for the most part, we do try to get to know founders well in advance of the actual financing coming together that we're going to participate in. So if you're able to do that, that gives you more of an opportunity to find yourself in the, same place at the same time and meet up with someone.
Great. So, it'd be really helpful if you can help us understand the degree that Deloitte Canada will get involved with supporting its portfolio companies.
Yeah, I mean, so for Deloitte Ventures, our primary strategic value that we're going to bring to our portfolio companies is in doing business with Deloitte. So Deloitte can be a great commercial partner. We're a massive organization with global reach. We have tons of great enterprise clients that could potentially be great clients for our portfolio companies or good channel partners for our portfolio companies. The hard part is that Deloitte can be a very complicated organization. So we have different individuals that might be responsible for managing the commercial relationship in different countries. Deloitte is a partnership, so we have many partners that each that manage their own business lines, and there may be many of them in any given country that could be relevant for you to work with. So that can make it difficult to achieve the higher end of what's possible in a relationship with Deloitte. And so as an investor, or having Deloitte Ventures as an investor on your cap table, what that gets you is kind of the person on the inside that can help you to navigate through that. So in terms of prioritizing which groups or which partners within Deloitte have the biggest opportunities, the ones that are the most actionable. And then also just sort of chasing down people in both directions to make sure that deals get done, that communications are flowing smoothly. It can be really helpful to have kind of a cheerleader in on the inside that can help you navigate that. So that's the main thing that we bring to the table, and the generally what our portfolio companies are looking for when they take our capital. And then beyond that, we also try our best to do some of the other traditional value add services that institutional VCs would provide. So helping them understand, comps that are happening in their space, wrapping their heads around valuation and getting prepared for upcoming financings, dealing with strategic decisions. All of those are areas that we can be helpful as well. But the priority is always going to be on making it efficient for you to do business with Deloitte.
Yeah, I mean, without question, and talk about a tremendous value add, just given the breadth and depth of expertise that exists within the firm. I am curious, though, just from a process perspective, do you find that generally you're connecting with the Deloitte business owners first to understand what their objectives and priorities are, and then finding a founder or a portfolio company who could be a match? Or do you just say, hey, I just met this company, I have an opinion that there's an alignment. Now let me go find a business owner within the company to be a champion.
Yeah, it goes, both of those can happen. I would say, so in Deloitte Canada, we have 1,500 partners. So that's a lot of individuals to have relationships with. Not all of them are engaged in this, with startups and in the sectors that we cover. But part of my job is to get to know the right people amongst those 1,500 and develop relationships with them and understand what their needs are for their clients. So, hey, we're getting this insight that our cybersecurity clients or our clients generally are asking for this type of cybersecurity tool. Like that can be a very valuable insight and potentially be something unique to Deloitte Ventures in that, we can have insights that are filtered in through many enterprise clients and get a sense for what they're thinking. So that can definitely happen, and that can enable us to go out and build a thesis and go out and seek out companies that have the tools that our partners are looking for. But it works in the other direction as well. I mean, you can't always foresee trends, and sometimes you're going to become aware of a new market or a new opportunity because you get introduced or come across a company who has built a new and unique tool. And so that can go in the other direction as well. But the main thing that's consistent is that we in all cases, we'll leverage the subject matter experts that are embedded throughout Deloitte to get their take on a company once we're engaged with them. So whether that's driven by the subject matter expert themselves or whether it's inbound, we're going to use that expertise. And it is another superpower when you can have a someone that's been doing looking at financial services for 25 years and has been dealing with banks and financial institutions generally. If you can tap into that type of person to get a pulse on, the defensibility and uniqueness of the IP of a product, how big the market's going to be, what potential customers are going to say, or what their objections are going to be, all those can be super valuable.
Yeah, I mean, obviously a whole host of corporate venture capital firms out there, but if, if I think about the nature of Deloitte's business, I mean, what a tremendous advantage that the firm has, just given the knowledge base that exists.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I like to say, like, in to do well in venture capital, you only have to do three good things really well. And one of those is find deals, find the right deals, get into those deals, and then leave a good impression on the companies that you invest in. And I think that's part of the reason that Deloitte Ventures has the strong potential to be successful, because we should be able to do all of those things. So, as I mentioned, we've got 1,500 partners, 15,000 employees across the country, many of whom have access to the startup ecosystem. They know senior executives at some of the biggest companies across the country who may have insights or may leave to start their own businesses. So that gives us lots of access to deals in the first place, or at least the awareness. And then in terms of getting into the deals, Deloitte brings a lot to the table. So you asked about what type of strategic value we have. The potential, if you're a Series A or Series B company, which is where we target, and you have the potential to leverage Deloitte to get in front of some clients, and that helps you land one or two more clients at a critical point in your growth, that can be a major, catalyst to you achieving the next stage in your development. And then finally, on leaving a good impression, again, if we succeed on that commercial front, that if you're a founder and you took Deloitte's money and we helped you grow your business, you're going to tell other founders that you had a good experience. So, if we can do those three things, and we should have the sort of infrastructure to be able to achieve that, I think that's a good foundation for us to be successful as our as a corporate venture capital firm.
Well, I love the formula. Really well said. And so what are some of the things that you're currently bullish on, or that you find that the partners are telling you that, hey, be on the lookout for X?
Yeah, I think one thing that I'm excited about is just the potential for vertical AI. So, with horizontal AI tools now being commonplace, I think there is a lot of potential for founders that have unique insights into their industry that they understand, or unique access to data that can build tailored tools specific for the needs of a particular industry. And I think, we're starting to see a higher volume of businesses that are tackling exactly those types of problems. There are many verticals that have very significant total addressable markets. I think these tools, especially, you think about agentic AI solutions that are increasingly doing jobs on the behalf of the business. That's super exciting too, because it means that when you think about the willingness to pay of the organization, you're shifting from, thinking about your existing software budget to thinking about your budget for labor. So if you're able to, build a tool that is able to either augment or replace staff, the potential find cost savings are significant, and it means your willingness to pay is going to be high. So I think there's going to be some very significant and material winners that are building tools in the vertical AI space. So that's one that we're excited about and that I'm looking at closely.
Yeah, I mean it's easy to have consensus. I mean payroll is generally your largest expense for most non-manufacturing businesses. And then, yeah, I mean I think it's just a question of timing. I argue maybe we're bottom of the first as far as scope of automation. And if we were to have this conversation a couple of years from now, we'd have our socks knocked off. But I think perhaps most relevant is that it's inevitable. And or at least if something throws it off track, I don't know what it is yet.
Yeah, and I think there's some, industries where it will go quicker than others. Anywhere where there's like highly repeatable tasks that are done by human beings today, also like for industries that are characterized by labor shortages. So, think of like insurance or accounting, where are two that come to mind, where you have an aging workforce and the amount of people that are retiring from those senior roles is significant over the next 10 years, and there's just not the pipeline of people to replace them. So in some cases it's like it's necessary, and there's the drivers to, or the incentives for the people that are running businesses today to adopt those tools are very material. So yeah, I agree with you, and I think some of them are going to move relatively fast.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. So it'd be interesting because I think you hit the nail on the head too, is that people will pay up even if the overall cost is less than what it was to have those people on the payroll. But my expectation, like all things, is that costs would come down over time. And so, it's a fun question to wonder is how does the capital get reallocated? Does it just flow to shareholders or, what's the next best thing? And I don't know. Is there anything else top of mind, AI aside, that you find yourself thinking about or mentioning to you?
Yeah, I don't know. I think one of the sectors I cover is in fintech. I think that we continue to see lots of interesting innovation there. I think opportunities like investments around payments and the potential for things like stable coins to enable that and make it easier for people to move money across borders and for cheaper are very interesting and things that we're monitoring. But yeah, and I think fintech in general has been kind of going through a weak phase in terms of valuations and exits and things like that. So I think that's a one that I'm particularly interested in and think has potential to do well over the next couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, so we're recording this in June 2025. Tokenization, stablecoins seems to be, a topic that I find myself having conversations with. And, as I think about it, I think about transparency. And I think overall, everyone will benefit, not only direct shareholders, but indirect as well, as it frees up liquidity, but also gives people a record to understand who owns what. Jay, I've really enjoyed our podcast. A lot of great insights. Before we wrap up, one of my go-to questions is a retrospective. I enjoy asking if you had an opportunity to go back, have a conversation with your younger self, what would you share?
Yeah, I'd say just take more risks more often. I think the older you get, you realize how little downside there truly was. So in any given moment, I think human beings are wired to be averse to bad outcomes, and that the truth is that in your assessment, you're very likely to bias yourself to thinking that the bad outcome is far worse than it actually is. So, especially for young people, I think that taking big risks, like starting a company or switching to a new job, or doing a university program that your parents don't think you should do, but you're super passionate about, whatever it is, if you're excited about it, I just encourage my younger self, I guess, in the scenario to jump into things and I guess not worry too much about the downside.
I think that's great counsel. And I think there are a lot of us who've had similar experiences. I definitely for members of our audience who are, maybe about to graduate college or who just got out. I mean, you're right. Hey, world changes when you have a mortgage, car payments, private schools, and a whole host of fixed expenses. Early 20s is a great time. Because you're right. I mean, if things go south, well, the consequences are different than if you're in your 30s or 40s or older.
Yeah, especially like some of the things that I mentioned, like the downsides. You're very much like focus on the downsides of like, okay, well, I won't make as much money, or I won't be in the same position as I would otherwise if I took this safer route. But also, those risky routes tend to have rewards even if they do fail, and so you may have garnered some experience that means that you can go and start another company or join a company in a role that you never could have achieved otherwise, having not gone through that journey. So the just the ride itself has a lot of value in terms of your career progression and also just like your lifestyle and happiness.
Yeah, I've heard Nelson Mandela get credited with this. I don't know if he actually said it, but win or learn, I never fail. 100% agreed. I think if your outlook is that regardless of the outcome, if I give it my all, it's going to happen exactly how it should is great.
Awesome.
Jay, before we wrap up, last question. Anyone in your career or network that's had an indelible impression on you and like to give a shout out to?
Yeah, I think I'll give a shout out to my dad. So just being is not necessarily a direct business shout out, but in general, I think he has designed his life in a way that makes him happy. And so I think that regardless of what you're doing, you should remember that you only get to live once, and to choose a route that brings you happiness. So find your passion, stick with it, and worst case scenario, you'll be doing something you love either way. So that's my ending note.
I love it. I think that's great advice. Jay, if there are any members of our audience who'd like to get a hold of you, how can they find you?
They can go to the Deloitte Ventures website. So that's one easy way. I'm on LinkedIn. Easy to find me there as well. So I'd say either of those two channels, you can track me down and get in touch.
Fantastic. And again, for the benefit of our audience, Jay Crone, Managing Director and VC at Deloitte Ventures. Jay, thank you again for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks, Christian.
And again, I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. Take care. Christian Marquez here. Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. If you are a successful founder or an investor, would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovators and Investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. Would you like to know more? Go to our website, finstratmgmt.com. Or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is @FinstratMGMT. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.